Next case is In Re Dean, Todd Daniel Bell appearing for appellants, Sana Dean appearing pro se.
Okay, good morning. Mr. Bell, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, very good. Please go ahead.
Your Honors, I think I'm going to rely mainly on the briefing. But I just want to point out that I've seen nothing that gives any kind of viable means for the court to have asserted jurisdiction in this case because of the fact that it was a closed case, fully dismissed.
Let me stop you there because you say closed and dismissed as if they are interchangeable. Is that true?
No, they're not interchangeable. The cases do make that distinction.
Okay, and this case was just closed, wasn't it? Doesn't the court's order or the clerk's notice, I've forgotten which it was, doesn't it just say closed?
No, the adversary proceedings were also dismissed as a separate matter.
Is there an order on that?
That's my understanding, Your Honor, yes.
I didn't see it.
Me neither.
Yeah. But go ahead.
Well, there was a notice given to all parties that the matter would be dismissed, and therefore, doesn't the closure automatically dismiss? Adversary proceedings?
I thought the notice said it would be closed.
Yep.
And the word dismissed was never in there. That's what I recall from the record.
Okay. Well, we also wanted to point out that the appellants were definitely prejudiced by what occurred in this case. And I guess my question, therefore, would be a purported Rule 5010 proceeding, was it proper for the court to take this action when the matter had been closed? And the answer is found in the Valdez case. The court at that point lost jurisdiction over all proceedings, and there was no nexus to a bankruptcy case any longer. And that means that there's nothing further for the court to have purported to reopen. There's nothing that the court could do to remand at that point. And they're two separate proceedings, and they were compressed in this particular case without really due process to my clients. The court also ignored the other adversary proceeding applicable in this case, which arose out of the same case, the Dean versus Dean case that was remanded to the bankruptcy court, because that is a claim by the attorneys that was brought in the adversary proceeding for fees arising, and my client's malpractice claim against them also. So that wasn't remanded. How can you remand one proceeding without remanding both proceedings back to the court from which they came? I'm not sure. I don't understand how that could happen. We feel that the court ignored public policy for finality in this case. As we pointed out in the briefs, the parties had settlement discussions. My client, in reliance upon what they felt was an agreement to end all proceedings, closed the bankruptcy. And in this case, now we have one adversary proceeding sort of resurrected, without the other being resurrected.
Has anybody asked to resurrect the other one?
Yes, my clients have.
But what happened? What did the court do with that?
It's pending, actually, on appeal in California courts on the dismissal by the court. Puzzlingly, the court, while the bankruptcy stay was in effect in California, purported to dismiss that cause of action against the attorneys that represented my clients in the Dean versus Dean matter.
So that's a claim by your clients against their attorney, correct?
Correct.
Right.
And in the bankruptcy, that law firm filed its own proof of claim in the bankruptcy, purporting to be owed, I think, $500,000. And so, just to avoid multiplicity of proceedings here, you know, this particular purported order reopening the bankruptcy case and remanding should be set aside. Further, even if somehow there is a roadmap that can be provided to uphold that purported order, you have this unclean hands issue, because it's all based on a deed that was fraudulent, was found to be fraudulent. And so, you know, purporting to remand the case procedurally doesn't work, and in all fairness, should not be allowed to go forward. And with that, I'll just reserve the response time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Dean, please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. As you had asked earlier, I did look up there was no order saying that the adversary had been dismissed. There was only a notice issued by the clerk of the bankruptcy court on April 10th that said that pursuant to the local bankruptcy rule, this adversary proceeding will likewise be closed unless the party files a motion seeking continuation. So, and there was a 7-day time limit there. So there was never a dis- And also, this was discussed in detail at the February 10, 2020 hearing when the remand was heard by the bankruptcy trial court. And the judge said that the bankruptcy was dismissed and that leads to the adversary proceeding being closed, not ruled upon, just closed and shut down. And he did make it clear that there had been no adjudication, no actual final judgment on the adversaries. So, and if it's okay, I hope that answers the question. And if it's okay, I'd like to make some more points.
Go ahead, please.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great, great. So there has been ongoing litigation, civil litigation in the state court between the two sides in the San Diego Superior Court for almost 6 years now, since the mid-2016, where the appellants were trying to take our Dean family home along with many other family properties. The state court has already conducted a trial on the first bifurcated cause of action and issued a judgment determining title to real property back in 2017. That was recorded in the county as well, showing that the title ownership was proven and you know, the title ownership was discussed in detail in that trial, and it was proven on detailed funding, forensic accounting funding, since the time of purchase of the property in 2010. It was not based on Punjabi culture. It was based on the title ownership division by the court was based on proven detailed funding. We also have 14 additional causes of action in that cross complaint. They're still pending in the state court. When the state court had already made numerous determinations involving the remaining causes of action, including findings of fraud against the appellants. Appellants have been very upset with the decisions, with those decisions and the judgment that was issued in the state court. And they had made over 14 attempts to vacate the valid judgment and to change the judge and the court venue, including several writs and appeals, all of which were unsuccessful and denied by the state court and the appellate courts over and over again. I've referred to these in the responsive brief, but I'd like to mention a couple of those attempts here. There was a detailed motion to vacate judgment, the same judgment that they're trying to call invalid in this new paperwork as well. A detailed motion was to vacate that judgment was brought by the appellants to the in the state court. It was denied by the state trial court on July 19, 2019. Then the appellants tried to stay the execution of that judgment, which was denied on August 29, 2019. Then they took it to the state appeal court for immediate stay of judgment. That same judgment, this is their third attempt now, in the appellate court. And it was denied by the appellate court on September 4, 2019, by three justices. That's when the appellants, by September 28th, so September 4th, they're getting all, they're not able to get this judgment stayed. It's a valid judgment that the court gave after 21 days of trial and deliberating about 2.5 months afterwards. So by September 28, 2019, appellants had filed a bankruptcy to get the entire stay on hold, a bankruptcy hold, or a bankruptcy stay. And they did that on the eve of second trial, staying the entire state case. And then they allegedly removed the state case to achieve their wish to change the judge and the court and to relitigate. And this whole, the first cause of action, which they seem to do in their paperwork over and over again, if you read their briefs. And this is basically to legally harass us by misusing the bankruptcy system into undoing or vacating a valid judgment and to get rid of all entire case. This is what they exactly what they were trying to do, and they're admitting and asking in their arguments, in their briefs, in this appeal. They're asking the entire case to be thrown out because of, you know, they brought it to the bankruptcy court and then dismissed a bankruptcy unilaterally. So it's clear that the bankruptcy was just used as a means to invalidate a valid judgment and to get rid of our entire pending claims. From the beginning, this was a sham bankruptcy. Appellant's bankruptcy petition was full of gross misrepresentations. The petition did not reflect correct titles and values of several properties, concealing the value of assets in multi-millions of dollars, including the Dean family home that the petition, the bankruptcy petition, they listed at around $100,000 value, when its real value is in millions. And both sides have actually expended over $1 million just in attorney fees in the state court that resulted in the judgment that they're now so desperately trying to invalidate now. And they're trying to do that all by themselves. They think that they can unilaterally throw out a superior court judgment that the appellate court, state court, denied to hold, to vacate, to invalidate. And they're just using it, the bankruptcy system. They're abusing it. Kashif Khwaja, who's the husband in the, out of the two appellants, debtors, he is a sole earner. He's a primary tax filer. He's the financial head of the household between the two debtors. But they put the housewife, Isha Dean, in the front line, using the non-working spouse who has no job or credit to risk by filing a bankruptcy under her name and social security number, where Kashif reaps all the benefits from the bankruptcy while hiding himself and the real debtor's name and social security number. And all this doesn't seem right. When the Chapter 13 trustee sought to validate the bankruptcy petition filings with site visits and evaluation of two properties for liquidation, which was immediately followed by their counsel, appellant's counsel, filing an emergency motion to be relieved as counsel, appellants realized that they couldn't pull a fast one in the bankruptcy court any longer. Then the appellants filed a voluntary dismissal of Chapter 13 bankruptcy case in April of 2020. And they did so before the scheduled motion to remand that we had on the calendar for May 27th of that year could be heard. In fact, before any motions or progress could be made on our remaining claims, even in the bankruptcy court. We've also learned since then, we've learned now that they had also done so this, they had also in that time that they filed this bankruptcy dismissal, they'd also done so to cash out and sell one of the family properties in Orange County that has been under litigation and has a list pendants on it. We have claims of ownership from our side and the other side. That property is called the San Gabriel property in Orange County. But within the days of their bankruptcy dismissal on May 18th, the appellants had already gone into contract by May 26th. This is within a week of getting their bankruptcy dismissal request completed. By May 26th, they had already gone into contract to sell that house, which is under list pendants, so they're going against the law and not letting anyone know. And by they had finalized that sale by July 15th of 2020, walking away with a value of $930,000. That's $930,000 when they had misrepresented its value, that same property's value in the bankruptcy petition, to be just a fraction of that value. Just a couple of months ago, they did that. They had misrepresented it's a fraction, and then they walk away with $930,000 of this property, and no one knew about this. They did that, and they keep on talking about why there's such a long time there's such a long delay, but they did all this, and we had no indication that they were up to this. So interestingly, the appeal attorney who's here today, Mr. Todd Beld, he is the same attorney that needed to have been involved in that property sale while it was under suspendance, as he was a representing the corporation that was involved with the holding.
Let me stop you for a second. Is that sale really part of this appeal? I don't recall seeing anything about that in the record of this appeal. What didn't happen before the bankruptcy court made its decision, correct?
We just recently learned about it because they mentioned it in the reply brief. In their reply, there was no place for us to discuss it in our brief. After our response had filed, we learned about this from the reply brief that they had sold a property. Mr. Beld, who is here, he was representing the corporation that was involved with that title. So he must have been involved because without his signature, that sale could not have happened. And now he's going out of his way to, in the paperwork, there's a lot of misrepresentations about us and the state court rulings. Our side had been actively pursuing all our claims in the bankruptcy court, and there was no, if we, we had filed our statement of non-consent, we were self-represented, but we filed the statement of non-consent, our proof of claims, non-dischargeability of debt, everything on time, even the adversary, while we waited for the motion to remand to be heard in May of 2020. It wasn't until the appellants filed a declaration in November of 2020 in the state court before a state court scheduled hearing. That's when we first learned about that their bankruptcy, that they had taken this new position, that there's lack of jurisdiction and the entire case has disappeared into thin air all of a sudden. So there were extensive arguments in the hearing. The bankruptcy court reopened and remanded our claims based on equitable grounds for the case to be decided on merit and issued the February 12th order, which is the subject of this appeal. During the hearing, the court had said that it's a general policy that the case must be decided on merits. The court also said that it has looked at all the factors. I'm just quoting a little bit from that transcript. The court has discretion and power to reopen the case, and then there's a set of considerations that were considered for the as far as whether the case should be kept at bankruptcy or remanded back. The court also said that there's a double request here. One is to reopen the adversary, and the court has discretion to do that in the interest of justice, to do that because the adversary proceeding does not have a final order or judgment. And then the court also talked about why the remand was proper and why it was practicing abstention, because it's against the policy, because there's the question of right to trial, right to jury trial that the court honored. We want to take this case to the trial. We are not waiving any of our claims. There's a lot that needs to be addressed. There are live disputes I would like to address with the state court. And it was discussed a little bit in the hearing, but in our paperwork. So in summary, our arguments are listed, they are listed in our brief, but what we feel is that, the court had the jurisdiction to clarify and effectuate its own orders. Adversary had only been closed. It was not dismissed. Reopen was an administrative procedure and a remedy, and only to clarify the court's bankruptcy dismissal order, effectuating the remand that occurred under the bankruptcy dismissal statutes. No new relief was granted by the court. So we've talked about that. Also, the local rule 70412B states, if a pending related adversary proceeding was removed from another court, it will be remanded to that court upon dismissal of the underlying bankruptcy case. And that order is in place right now. So the appeal is being heard right now, and that part of the law should apply to our current appeal. There's other arguments that we made in our responsive brief. We have a right to be heard. We took all the actions on any fashion as soon as we knew. We've heard about this on November 4th of 2020, and by November 10th of 2020, we were asking the bankruptcy court to clarify the jurisdiction issue. So, and also the subject order is not appealable because it was granted on equitable grounds. And it says so in 28 U.S.C. section 1452B that an order remanding a case to the state court from which it was removed is not reviewable on appeal. And similar thing is said in section 1447 D and C. So in summary, I would like to just say that the court had jurisdiction. There was no abuse of discretion. We had the full right to be heard. Proper procedures had been applied. The bankruptcy court had the discretion to reopen the adversary for good cause, and strong reasons and grounds existed here to provide equitable relief. The bankruptcy court had issued the order to reopen and remand based on findings of fact and conclusions of law, as a hearing transcript clearly supports. Yet appellants asked the appellate court to grant an appeal against the law. The subject order of the appeal is barred and immune from appeal. From what we can tell, the appeal is moot and the appeal should be denied. And therefore, we humbly request the Honorable Court to deny this appeal.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Any more questions from the panel?
No, thanks.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Bell, back to you for 9 minutes, if you need that much. But go ahead, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the dismissal, under Rule 7041-2, dismissal of related Title 11 case, whenever a case is dismissed, any pending related adversary proceeding within which a final judgment has not been rendered may be dismissed without prejudice. And then they're given 7 days to enter something with the court to undo that. So
you said maybe, right? Doesn't say will be.
May be dismissed without prejudice and without further order of the court. If there's no further order of the court needed, then it's a done deal.
That's a local rule you're reading from?
Yes, and I will point out that the appellees have cited a change in the rule that has since occurred, and that's why in the judge's in the hearing on the motion for reopening and remand, the judge says that's not the way it's done under our rules. It's not automatic that there's a remand. It's actually automatic that there's a dismissal. Now, the rule has since changed, but that doesn't apply to this case because the change occurred and it's not retroactive.
I just think it's profoundly strange and questionable that a case could be dismissed without there being an order providing for dismissal. I find it hard. That's a final judgment. How can you have a final judgment that's not written down anyplace? And the only written order in this case says closed. And I think it's actually not even an order. It's a notice from the clerk.
Well, let's look at that. On the 10th of April, 2020, there was a request for voluntary dismissal of the bankruptcy that was granted, and notice of dismissal were issued to all parties in each associated adversary proceeding, right? Then on the 18th, final terminations of the adversary proceedings are entered after dismissal.
So dismissal on of the bankruptcy? 18th,
yes.
But that's different than dismissal of the adversary, because there was no dismissal because the notice stated that it was being closed.
But
you can't
the rule
conflate
at that
these.
Time,
The rule is the rule, but what happened as a result of the rule is what's controlling here, and what was controlling is the notice of the parties on April 10th. That was the action that was taken, wasn't it?
Yes. And they didn't respond within the time allotted, and now they're gerrymandering kind of relief that is inappropriate.
Gerrymandering is certainly a matter of perspective, but the point is, isn't it, that there was a case that was sitting in the bankruptcy court as an adversary that was never decided. It just went away. Why shouldn't that case be decided?
It has been decided. It was decided based upon a settlement that was reached by the parties.
Where is that in the record? How do I know that?
It's obviously not in the bankruptcy record. Yes, there's no stipulation on file as to the settlement.
Right, and if it was decided, you still have that. That's your defense. There are no further causes of action because it was settled. But shouldn't that be heard and decided, as, you know, directly?
It should be heard in the bankruptcy court. Now,
the point is that the bankruptcy case went, the reason it was in the bankruptcy case disappeared. So the bankruptcy court has the ability to say, even though that case continues, even though the lawsuit continues, it should continue outside the bankruptcy. And that seems to be what the purpose of the rule is. And by just common sense, to have the matter decided one way or another as decided, that should happen. And that's why I don't understand. I mean, we're tussling with the, you know, the technicalities and the words to be used, but ultimately, shouldn't this case actually be decided?
It has been decided.
That's on the merits. Now, I think decided on the merits.
Yeah. Because I don't think closing is decided.
The question is, where should it be decided at this point, given all that's transpired? And they're saying it should be going back to the court from which it was removed and should not have been remanded, because there was a loss of jurisdiction that makes the order, you know, essentially null.
No, and I think you need to break that down too, because again, I think you're conflating possibly the bankruptcy and the adversary. The court had jurisdiction of the adversary. The court still has jurisdiction of the adversary. It can do whatever it needs to in the adversary, even if it has to be reopened and or a motion to set aside. It was never decided. It still has that quantum. There is no bankruptcy. I get you that. But you have to keep those two separate, don't you?
Well, but in this case, there was no proper procedure. I mean, they should be allowed to argue that in the bankruptcy court.
What harm did you suffer? Because you argued the remand, which is ultimately the ultimate question here. And there was a decision entered in both the bankruptcy and the adversary on order of reopening and remanding case to state court. So the substance was decided. You argued, and unfortunately you lost on the remand, but you know, hasn't where it should go now been decided?
Well, no. I mean, that assumes jurisdiction where it doesn't exist.
Well, there was jurisdiction because it was made pursuant to the bankruptcy. Now that bankruptcy is no longer there, but that jurisdiction existed. So are you arguing that the bankruptcy court should be hearing the merits of this case?
I'm arguing that my client should have an opportunity to properly argue whether the case should be remanded or heard in bankruptcy court, if indeed it is able to reopen a dismissed case. So at the very least, this ought to be remanded back to the court to have a separate hearing on whether remand is appropriate or whether it can be disposed of in the bankruptcy court.
Thank you.
Okay.
And then, and so...
Go ahead. Sorry, you have 2 minutes left. Please go ahead.
Yes, I see that. Okay. I just wanted to mention that they've made a lot of arguments about the sale of another property. It had nothing to do with this bankruptcy. It occurred after the bankruptcy. They've cast aspersions to say that I represented them. I don't know anything about it other than what they have told me about how that sale occurred. I did not represent them. Obviously, they would not have been able to make the sale with any kind of list pendants on the property. So I'm puzzled completely by that. And also, I can only surmise that it's a similar situation where they had created some false deed to try and claim some kind of interest in that property, when in fact the property was owned by them. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to sell it without any...
Well, we're way beyond the record here. But I think both sides are way beyond the record.
I just wanted to point that out. Yes. I submit on that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Any more questions from the panel?
No. Nope. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. The matter is submitted.
Thank you.
Thank
Madam
you.
Clerk, you can please call the next case.
Yes.